You're listening to KBOO Community Radio. Coming up next on Art Focus, Joseph Galaban interviews John Gottschall and Megan Patzold about their joint show called Counterpoint at Gallery 114. Before we go to Art Focus, I have a short announcement. Longtime Art Focus listeners will remember the late Julie Bernard, who hosted the program for many years, starting in the 1980s. Julie died last October. Her family is having her funeral and a reception on Saturday, August 20th. The service is at 3 p.m. and reception is from 4 to 7. It is at Elliott Chapel and Buchan Hall at the First Unitarian Church at 1011 Southwest 12th Avenue, downtown. Again, that is the funeral service for Julie Bernard. Now here's Art Focused with host Joseph Galaban.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Galaban, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are John Gottschall and Megan Patzold. John is a photographer, and Megan is an installation artist using video. They have a show right now at Gallery 114 through August 27th, and it's called Counterpoint. Thanks for coming into KBOO.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
John, just explain who you are and who's Megan.
First of all, I'm a member of Gallery 114. We're a cooperative gallery. And Megan is a former student of mine. I teach at the Art Magnet in Beaverton. It's called the Arts and Communication Magnet. And Megan graduated about 6 years ago from our school, and then she just recently finished up at Parsons.
Parsons in New York?
In New York City. And when I saw her over last Christmas break, I asked her how her thesis show went, and she said that, well, a lot of other artwork was in the room, and she was kind of in a corner, and she needed to project, and it wasn't as good as she had envisioned it, so I asked her if she'd be interested in having a second go at it, and my gallery has two rooms, so she took the back space and set it up the way she really wanted it.
Megan, you've done this work already, and you got a second chance to show it in better conditions in Portland. Explain to us, it's called Studies in Amblyopia. Nobody knows what amblyopia is.
Amblyopia is a condition where my eyes don't fuse. And so to prevent double vision, my brain suppresses vision from one eye or the other. So I can only see out of one eye at a time. And so amblyopia, the body of work, I manipulate the camera to sort of mimic that eye condition, and I block off different parts of the film plane to sort of reference that process.
John, you took a series of photographs of the old Selwood Bridge coming down and the new Selwood Bridge going up.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that work was all over the last year because the new bridge is pretty much done.
It's pretty much done. Actually, it started... I started photographing the bridge about a dozen years ago when I knew that it was going to come down. And part of it's because we look at civic structures as being just permanent and realizing that they're actually quite temporary. And the Selwood Bridge being very temporary, I spent a lot of time photographing it over the past 10 years. And then when the bridge construction happened, I started taking a lot more photographs of the new bridge going up, and then especially concentrated most recently as the new bridge has been opened and they started to take the old one down. And so I got on site usually around midnight and photographed the two bridges as they related to each other, because they're such a contrast in styles. And for me, there's a lot of sort of old Portland coming down and new Portland going up involved in sort of, you know, meta picture of what this was, but it's in a very specific situation.
Yeah, and they're pretty interesting bridges because the old Selwood Bridge was kind of really skinny and rickety, and
yep.
I think in your notes you said that there's a landslide sort of pushing it out of whack.
Right.
And it really, and they reduced the amount of traffic could go on it, and it was really on its last legs.
Yes, actually it was one of the most dangerous bridges in the country just before they took it down.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You mean even without a seismic event?
Mm-hmm. Oh, they said it would never, if they shook at all, it would come down. And as they were building the new bridge, they had to move the old one to temporary piers. And the temporary piers were already safer than the bridge had been before.
Mm-hmm.
So
the new one they built is really wide. It's pedestrian friendly, bike friendly, all
right,
that.
Very generous.
Yeah. And it's beautiful, too. It has mm-hmm. three beautiful arches.
Mm-hmm.
And whatever side you're looking from, you're getting a nice view of the bridge and a nice
right.
view of the hills or
right.
the neighborhood, downtown.
So it really replaced a Model T scaled bridge with a contemporary modern bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I was quite fond of the old bridge, actually, with the exception of the fact that I'm a bicycle rider, and that bridge was a terror for
yeah.
anybody who had to ride across that sidewalk. So in that regard, I won't miss it.
You took the sidewalk rather than the little going on the road?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So you have a very interesting technique of taking pictures and then printing them on acetate
mm-hmm.
so that the ink is still liquid and it moves around.
Yes.
And then what do you do to sort of mess with it?
Well, first of all, I shoot at night, so the lights are much more specific. It's not a broad daylight kind of thing, and I love the sort of theatricality of nightlight. Then I print it on acetate. Inkjet ink doesn't dry if it doesn't absorb. It starts out looking like the photograph, but very quickly the ink starts to run. And digital is much more specific than film used to be. Film is an analog process. You can mess with it and alter the results. Digital is much more precise. And I wanted a way to infuse the digital photograph with a sort of an organic process. And so this wet ink moves, and the photograph loses focus, but it does it according to the properties of the ink. And
mm-hmm.
I have two different printers I use, and the ink behaves very, very differently between the two of them. And then I put these Mylar, transparent Mylar sheets on a scanner at a ridiculously high resolution, and I bring those scans into the photo file. And then it's a matter of me just playing with how much of the scanned image and how much of the original photograph I reveal in each photograph.
Mm-hmm.
And
oh, wow.
That process is just a blast.
Is that more, I mean, say you take a photo and you mm-hmm. mess it up.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you then mess it up in Photoshop compared to that initial messing up?
Well, first of all, I'll do something to the photograph. I'll process the photograph in a way that I wouldn't if I was just going to show the photograph as a straight image, because I anticipate what might be happening.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really don't know what the ink is going to do. I sometimes reuse these Mylar sheets, and they get scratches and grease and dust on them, and that affects how the ink moves.
Mm-hmm.
And so I never really know what I'm going to get. So it's when I bring this new scanned layer into the photograph, I have no idea how it's going to turn out. And so really it's a process of just kind of discovering the relationships between one interpretation of this photograph and another. And it takes me a little while to sort of understand how to resolve it, but that process is just, it's a fabulous one. It's actually, mm-hmm. it's great fun.
Well, the end result is amazing because that all sounds very technical, but the
mm-hmm.
end result is so beautiful. Because you've got these big images and you know what's going on,
mm-hmm.
and it's as though the light is coming out of the ink. It's as though it's like a painting,
mm-hmm.
you know, where a painter would use the color to bring,
mm-hmm.
to project light. But you also know it's a photo, so
it's very important
there are light sources.
That the photograph be the basis of it. It's really
yeah.
important to me that this place actually existed, that it's real, but that it's also been sort of reinterpreted.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a painter, but I'm letting the ink become painterly. And part of my own particular interest is seeing how the kinds of things that we imagine out of our heads and the kind of things that natural processes come up with without any intelligent design, shaping it, how much confluence there is between those two processes. And so there's, you know, I look at what the ink has done and it looks like somebody's taken a sumi brush to paper, mm-hmm. but I haven't touched it.
Yeah.
And that kind of organic process, I just find really exciting.
Yeah. So you have these there's a one called Disjointed. It's on the right as you mm-hmm. go in mm-hmm. and it's, you can see a sort of arch, orange
yes.
span. And then there's
the, new bridge, yeah.
the old green box span is sort of in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's trees and bushes. On the far bank, there's a building that's probably condos or something.
Yes.
But it looks like it's on fire. The light's coming out of it. It's lit
right.
up at night, right?
Right.
right.
It's
in
lit
the middle
up,
of
so
the night.
So it's the yellow lights coming out of the windows. And the ink on the Mylar sees that yellow and it goes down, but then it's spread out. So it became these kind of yellow-orange bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the windows there. But I agree. I love how it's sort of – it looks like the way light scatters in fog.
And then, yeah, it looks like fog, yeah. And then you've got like electric lights coming from streetlights and mm-hmm. other sources.
Mm-hmm.
In some of them, there appears to be dusk going on, like a – distant horizon light, is that true? Is that just
the distant horizon line is actually, since these are taken at night, the horizon line is actually the city lights.
Okay.
In the background.
So you're using a long exposure?
Yes.
Well,
yeah,
how long?
Yeah. With these photographs, most of them around 30 seconds, sometimes longer. Yeah. Digital is easier to do than the old film was. That 30-second exposure would have been 5 or 8 minutes with film. But, yeah, it takes that long. The light is low enough it takes that long for it to register properly. And one of the things I learned from doing this, actually, many years ago, there's a full spectrum of color at night. We don't see it because it's too dim for the cones, the color receptors in our eyes to mm. fire. But a digital camera, if you leave the lens open long enough, there's all sorts of color out there.
Really?
And
what kind of camera? Like if someone at home wants to try this, can they try on a point
Anybody
and shoot?
That has 30 seconds on a camera and a tripod can do it.
And
one of the things I also discovered when I was shooting black and white, which I did for 25 years, I was aware of illumination. I wasn't aware of light temperature or light colors. And so we're all familiar with incandescent light, what it does on film, that yellow-red color. But the lights going across the old Selwood Bridge were mercury vapor. They give off a cyan-colored light.
What color is that again?
They give off a cyan color.
What color?
So it's
red?
Blue-green.
Blue?
A blue-green.
Okay.
And when that cyan color hits leaves, the green of leaves, it creates this kind of green that I just had never seen before. And I flipped instantly from being a black and white photographer to a color photographer. And then I started to really discover how to use that kind of color. I now know when I look at lights, if it's a warm color or a cool color. And that's something that you can use to compose.
Mm-hmm. So your work, I mean, you can enjoy from the engineering point of view, but mm-hmm. you can also get totally lost in the colors and
yeah.
how did this happen and does the world really look like this in the middle of the night.
Mm-hmm.
Megan, your work, you go into a room, it's a white box, there are two projectors, mm-hmm. they're at right angles to each other, so two walls are getting images on them, and it was quite a bright room. You know, the images were hard to make out. I went in and it was just a faint orange splotch, mm-hmm. just like a circle on the wall first, and it took about a minute for it to change into anything. What is that?
For me, the subject matter of the photographs isn't important, and I don't remember most of them. It's the process that's really interesting to me. The way that I have it set up, to reference again that idea of the left and the right, and I was really interested in creating this room, like you said, that you walk in and it's this kind of overwhelming perceptual space and you can't really make out what's happening or what you're looking at, and then you're looking at it and you're not quite sure if it's changing, and then if you look away for a minute and you look back, it's changed. I'm interested in that sort of perceptual relationship, and that was my goal with the installation. having the room to finally make that happen was a great opportunity. And I think it's a really great first step.
You were at Parsons, they stuck you in a corner.
It's 60 people in my photo class. So we each had about 6 feet of space. I asked for a corner because I wanted to
But you needed really a room, right?
I really needed
for
a room.
For darkness.
Yeah.
Okay.
Everyone wants a room for their work. I had two 36-inch TVs, and they were sort of how the walls are set up now. And I mounted them onto this like black velour to separate it from the rest of the gallery. But the way to see it is in that room. Mm. It can be shown as prints as well. But the space that you walk into is the truest form of the work. And I'm really interested in creating a perceptual experience that's coming from perceptual experience.
So you took stills, and then how do they change?
So it's a 12-minute video loop, and I put them into a video editor, and then it's like a 30-second crossfade. It varies. I wanted there to be... I didn't want there to be like this expected rhythm, like every 30 seconds the image changes. And the relationship between the images that are on the wall was very considered. And sometimes they like almost look like one image, and other times they break apart and they are very different images.
Mm-hmm.
They're technically still images. It's sort of in between video and stills.
So I could make out certain things that look like windowsills mm-hmm. or Venetian blinds, that kind of thing. How recognizable do you think you are aiming for?
I was aiming for something that was almost recognizable, but there were moments where you really couldn't make anything out. I found myself photographing light most of the time, going back to the source of photography and the source of vision. That's why I was photographing, you know, blinds, light coming through blinds. There's a couple, I think there's like the subway lights of a train coming towards the platform, street lights coming through trees.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are John Gotzel and Megan...
It's okay. Paitzold.
John Gotzel and Megan...
Paitzold.
Paitzold.
Who gave you doozies?
My guests this week are John Gotzel and Megan Paitzold. Their show, Counterpoint, is on now at Gallery 114 in the Pearl, and it runs through August 27th. Megan, you take pictures, but are you trying to reproduce something you see natively, or what are you doing?
That's a question that I get a lot, whether or not I actually see the way that these images look. The short answer is no, and I was never interested in reproducing that. The most accurate way to reproduce the way I see, I really just see the way a camera sees because I have one lens, so to speak. So the photos would just be photos. It wouldn't be that interesting. I was much more interested in creating something abstract that plays with your perception and just using my own perceptual process as the starting point and the inspiration for the processes that I use.
In art school, what are the influences that have brought you to that?
It's funny, I've changed a lot in art school. I started in fashion, actually, is why I went to Parsons, and as you can see, it's changed a bit. My main influences right now are a photographer called Jessica Eaton, and then Mariah Robertson is a big influence. A lot of photographers who are dealing with these themes of perception and how it relates to photography, and using the camera to see things that we can't, and sort of embrace what's unique about the mechanics of the camera instead of trying to represent reality. I've also been reading Kaya Silverman a lot, her new book.
Who's that?
Kaya Silverman. So she's a writer, and she just wrote a book called The Miracle of Analogy. And it's this really great sort of reimagining of photo history. And she sort of talks about how our perception of the world is completely dependent on photography, and photography is completely dependent on our perception of the world. So that sort of like reciprocal relationship of photography and sight is what I'm really interested in.
Mm-hmm. These are people you've discovered since going to college?
Some during college, some spoke. You know, when you're passionate about photography and you just want to keep looking and seeing what other artists are making. And in New York, which is where I'm based, there's just so much to see. And there's so many artists making amazing work all in these themes. It's a very good time.
What's a typical place you'd go in New York for stimulation of what you're studying? It would be a photo gallery or a place?
It's both. It's really, I'll go. There are a couple galleries in New York that are really great for photo. The Aperture Foundation is great. Yossi Milo is one of my favorites, and Yancey Richardson.
And where does social media fit into that?
I'm not actually that good at social media. I've started to really follow bookstores, artists that I like, and then it'll suggest artists. Most recently, the show up at Aperture right now, I followed a lot of the artists from that because it's all about photography and perception and magic.
So if a KBOO listener went to look at that Aperture show, they would find some Instagram handles to look at, do you think?
I think so. I think the show is called Photography is Magic. I follow the Aperture Foundation Instagram. Instagram is really a great way, I think. If you want to talk social media and art, I think Instagram is the best way to really get to know artists. Because you can see finished work, and you can also see in studio processes, and you get sort of a behind-the-scenes look at it.
And you get the casual, you know, street photography that they enjoy doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. John, the whole show is called Counterpoint, and your section is also Counterpoint, because you're contrasting two bridges and what they mean about Portland. Do you ever sort of, is there anything you've learned about the city, having seen them take down the old bridge and put up the new one?
For me, it really illustrates the fact that cities are dynamic places. They don't stay the same for very long, and which is, I used to live in Inner Southeast near Division Street, and that's a sort of classic case in point. But this is one particular example that I thought stood out really well. Even if the bridge hadn't been damaged because the earth shifted on one end of it, it was a bridge that was built for a certain time and a certain kind of need and a certain kind of use. And Portland was a much smaller place back then. And now Portland is growing so rapidly. And so just as one particular example of how Portland is changing, this seems to be a good way to encapsulate it.
And what was your access like in the middle of the night?
Oh, it was lovely. The people who would have been working would have been upset with me. But, you know, I would park my car or my bicycle in a discreet place, and there was nobody there. It was not at all my interest to touch anything. I was there to look. And so I went into the construction site, found whatever vantage point I wanted to without having to argue with any foreman or security people.
Really? No security?
There was nobody there. I went as far out as I could on both the old bridge when they were tearing it back. And there was also a platform they built out across the river so they could bring heavy machinery out and to work on the new bridge. Nobody out there, just me and the nocturnal creatures, which is really how I prefer to work.
There's one bridge sunset. It's kind of the end one. If you go counterclockwise, it's behind the desk. And it has, it's two bridges, right, parallel? It's got the old balustrade, the kind of very tiny
right detail. It's actually a view that you could never have shot before. It was shot from the new bridge of the old bridge. It was a scene that could not have been taken before.
It was just a moment, right, where the both bridges were up.
Right.
And you've got the skyline, the sort of coin tower, and some of the little boxy building in the background.
Right.
Portland looks very tiny in the background.
Right, exactly.
But there's this massive black mountain on the west side coming down.
Right.
Is that meant to be a final picture? The way it's hung?
Yeah, you could see it that way. The title and the time of day do coincide with what's happening. You know, it's the sunset for that bridge. It's and now it's, I believe, completely gone. Maybe there's pieces of the temporary piers that they're still removing, but the bridge itself is no longer there.
Oh, yeah, it got barged up to Schnitzer.
I'm not a street photographer, but part of this, the timing really mattered. The newest picture that's up on the wall is about 2 weeks old. There were several times where I either heard something on the radio or would drive past and thought, I have to go back tonight because that's not going to be there tomorrow. That's not something you usually consider with a major structure. It's usually there today, tomorrow, the next day, and you can count on it being there for quite a long time. And the fact that this was happening in the moment and this represents a major change for at least this part of Portland, and now the new bridge will be up for who knows how long until it no longer services.
When the Tillicum Crossing was growing up, did you have the same attachment?
A little bit, and I took photographs of it, but I didn't have, honestly, the same kind of relationship with that bridge. Plus, they never left it alone. There was no way I could get out onto it without being asked to turn around.
What about getting your old drone out?
Yeah. The one thing I learned many years ago about having a camera, cameras are little magic permission tools. If you get caught where you don't belong and you have a camera, you just get asked to leave as opposed to get put in the backseat of a squad car and taken downtown.
Really?
I'm a little fearless with that.
Does the camera have to look like a traditional news camera, like a SLR?
No, just a camera and a tripod just to make it look serious.
Tripod. Yeah.
But the fact is, I am serious and I'm not interested in disturbing things. I'm not going to reset things to fit my vision. I'm there to find out what is going on and to frame it.
Do you do any other photojournalism?
Not a lot, actually. My serious photography is, like I say, most of it I prefer to do late at night. If you look out your window at 1:30 in the morning, I might be the guy with the camera pointed at your house. Don't be alarmed. I'm not
What are you photographing?
In a case like that, I would be photographing probably your porch light and how it's backlighting the plants in front of your porch. And maybe there's a light in a window in the house, and then there's something behind your house. And just the way it frames. I have had a couple people come out and say, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. But the beauty of a digital camera is I can show them.
Oh, okay.
I can diffuse the situation, right. Yes.
That's interesting. And Megan, what are you going to do next after this show? Hmm. Must be quite cool at school to say you had a gallery show already.
Oh, yeah. It's been a crazy month. I've had two shows and I just got a job. So it's been a whirlwind post-grad. I have two other projects that I'm working on in tandem with this. I feel like artists never really just focus on one project. I know for me, I sort of have a bunch of different things going on, and they all feed into the same themes, more or less, but they manifest differently. I'm really interested in photography's relationship to perception and memory and how it can manipulate and represent those. So I have a couple different things that I'm working on. I've been doing some work with like an Oculus, trying to make a video somewhat in the vein of what's up at Gallery 114, where you would put it on and at different points, the left and the right would go in and out of fusion. And so you would have this sort of abstract thing that's fused, and then all of a sudden it would upset, it would invert one side. And so visual fusion would break for you. And that's something that I actually would never be able to see the way that you see. And I'm really fascinated with the idea of making something that I can never experience. So that's what's on tap for me right now.
And John, what are you shooting now?
I'm actually thinking about doing something entirely differently. I don't know if this is an endpoint at all. I'll probably come back to it in a certain way. But the thing that I'm most interested in now is I found a number of old book plates, like 100-year-old book plates that are photographs of people that had their face in some book. I don't know what. And they're scratched and marred and have all the deterioration of a century on them. And I'm going to scan those and blow those up and play with them. Mm-hmm. Just they're somebody's father or uncle. I have no idea who. And just to play with the sort of the memory of somebody that was around a long time ago, and probably use the same process because it's exciting, and I don't know how it's going to come out.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week were John Gottschall and Megan Peitzold. Their show Counterpoint is up now at Gallery 114 in the Pearl through August 27th. Thanks very much for coming into KBOO.
Thanks for having
me. Thank you. Andy Warhol looks a scream. Hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen. Can't tell them apart at all.
Lightning, but I'm still under a cloud. Lean back if I speak too loud. If I don't hide, no one can hunt me down. Fell off the map, went on the run. One story ended, another begun. Without a home, no one can come around. You'll have to bury me standing. You'll have to kick the day into the night. You'll have to drown me in that boiling sea and bathe me in that cold, cold light. You'll have to bury me standing, my suit on and my hat held tight. You'll have to drive me in the ocean, bathe me in that fire's light.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Minority Cannabis Business Association Marley Natural Expungement Day, August 27th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Village Ballroom in Portland. Expungement means to set aside arrests or convictions. Attendees that have applicable nonviolent cannabis-related crimes on their criminal record will leave the event with their expungement paperwork approved and processed.